I want to thank Jorge for inviting me to give this seminar. And well, I'm going to speak about some computations of black hole entropy in lukewarm gravity, but using some techniques that are related or that come from number theory. So this is a work that I've been doing during the last year, more or less, in collaboration with Fernando Barbero and Eduardo Villaseñor from Madrid, and also with Iván Agulló and Enrique Fernández Borja from Valencia. So I go to next slide. And well, the plan of the talk that I'm going to follow is I will start with a very brief introduction of how black hole entropy is treated in lukewarm gravity. And then I will give the motivation for seeking a different way of computing it. I will see why do we need to look for these new techniques. And then I will very clearly state the combinatorial problem that we need to solve in order to after this see how the number theory techniques come into play in the solution of this problem. Then with these techniques we will be able to obtain some, well, to make some improved analysis of the results. And after that, I will also present some generating functions for this combinatorial problem, which are also a very useful tool and powerful tool for solving this kind of problems. And I will come back to the problem of the asymptotic limit. And when I say come back, it's because in the motivation it's going to appear this asymptotic limit. And I will just finish with some open problems that arise from this new computation. So go to slide number 3. And well, this is the black hole entropy in Loop quantum gravity. Was done 10 years ago by Ashtekar, by Skolic and Krasnov. And here the entropy of a black hole is considered to arise from the degrees of freedom of the horizon. So this horizon is described by a Chern-Simons theory, a U1 Chern-Simons theory, over a sphere with n distinguishable punctures. These punctures are points that we remove from the sphere and are topological defects. And then we have the solutions of the Chern-Simons theory, which are flat connections except at these punctures where, well, there's a non-trivial holonomy around these punctures that gives rise to an angle deficit that can be labeled at each puncture by a number A. So, well, we can see in the picture that we can imagine all the curvature of the horizon concentrated at these punctures where there's a conical singularity of curvature. And well, these punctures on the horizon arise because of the spin network in the bulk that pierces the horizon. So on top of this Chern-Simons case, we also have additional labels corresponding to the edges of the spin network piercing the horizon, which are the J labeling the U2 representation on its edge, and an additional label M on the punctures, which is the spin projection. So, well, through these J labels, the horizon acquires a value of area through the low quantum gravity area spectrum. And we also have a relation between M labels and the labels A from the Chern-Simons theory. So all this is more or less related. So then if we go to next slide, what do we have to do to obtain the entropy? Well, this entropy is obtained as the logarithm of the number of independent Chern-Simons states. for a given value of area. So once we fix the value of the area in the horizon, we want to count all these Chern-Simons independent states. So these states that are labeled by these A numbers must satisfy some constraint. The first is equation 2, which is an equation coming from the fact that the horizon has a spherical topology. So we are dealing with sparse-like black holes. But then we see in equation 3 that there's a relation between these A labels and the M labels of the spin network in the bulk. This relation arises because of the isolated horizon boundary conditions. And we also have the known relation between M's and J's, namely M goes from minus J to K. But finally, as we are fixing a value of the area, these J's must satisfy the relation to the black hole area spectrum. They have to give rise to the appropriate value of area. So what we have to count is all possible states labeled by these A's that satisfy equation 2, but that they also are related with some M labels, such that there exists at least one compatible J sequence that gives rise to the appropriate value of area. So this is the problem that we want to solve in order to compute black hole entropy. So if we go to the next slide, well, this problem was solved some years ago, but was solved in a particular limit, which is the large area limit. So the solution in this limit is equation 6. And we can see that there's a linear behavior between of entropy with area as a function of area. And furthermore, as we can see, it appears in this linear relation, the Barbero-Immitzi parameter, this gamma. So by choosing the appropriate value of gamma, we can tune the slope of this linear relation in order to make the Bekenstein-Hawking law to be satisfied. So this is good, and we have an additional term, an additional logarithmic correction with a minus 1/2 coefficient, which is, in this case, independent from Barbero-Immitzi parameter. So this is the kind of solution we have in the large area limit. But after this, there are other solutions to the problem. In this case, there were some exact computational solutions that were obtained with a computer, and but in this case for microscopic black holes, for very in the very low area regime. And in this regime, we find a different result. So we can see that entropy has a discretized behavior with area, in following this kind of stair-like behavior, and this comes from a very precise structure, very characteristic structure, this band structure that we can see in the right plot. So, well, in fact, this result is not that different from the previous one, because on top of all these oscillations, we still can see this linear behavior. And, well, we cannot appreciate it here in this plot, but in fact, one makes a precise analysis, one can even recover here the logarithmic correction. So this result is completely compatible with the large area limit, but it shows an additional feature, which is this there that we can see here. So well, we have somehow two different results in two different regimes, and there are some natural questions that arise. Is this discrete behavior only present for this lower regime, or can we somehow expect it to appear in the large area limit? Can we extend the validity of this result? And then what we need to do is to trying to extend the exact computation to the larger limit. So this is more or less the motivation for looking for a different way of computing this entropy. So I go to next slide. And what I want to do here is to present, to state the combinatorial problem in a slightly different way. This was done by Tomagala and Lewandowski in 2004. And the thing is, try to get rid of such mess of different labels. So we are going to use only one label, one kind of label, the same label, and simplify as much as possible the problem. So this can be done, and the problem is so the number of independent states for a given value of area is 1 plus the number of all finite arbitrarily long sequences of m, which are non-zero half integers, such that these two relations are satisfied. The first, equation 7, is just the one that we had before, equation 2, but now with m labeled. And the second is it's somehow the area spectrum, but with absolute values of m instead of j's. And we can see that we have an inequality instead of the previous equality. This can be justified because, once we give a value of m, we don't know the corresponding k value associated to it at this puncture, but we have a lower bound for the possible values that j can take. So j cannot be lower than m. So once we fix values for m at all the punctures, we have a lower bound for the value of the horizon area. We cannot tell the area of the horizon, but we can give a lower value. So if we want to count all these states such that can be compatible with a given value of area, we have to count those states which have this lower value below the area we are fixing. So this is what the equation 8 is telling us. And it can be seen that this problem formulated this way is completely equivalent to what we said in the previous slide. So, I go to next slide, slide number 7. And, so we want to solve this problem, and we are going to further simplify by introducing some notation. So in order to work just with positive numbers, we define these k labels, which are defined as 2 times the absolute value of m. And we also define the occupancy numbers n and k, which are a given state, the number of punctures carrying a given value of k, or carrying values of m such that 2 times absolute value of m is equal to k. So we define these occupancy numbers, and if we also use to get rid of this prefactor unit such that 4 times pi gamma Planck length is equal to 1, then we simplify the notation. And with a set of these nk numbers for values of k, 1, 2, etc., we can characterize a horizon state. Not completely characterize a horizon state, just choose a set of horizon states, because we still have some freedom to choose a reordering of the corresponding k labels, and furthermore to assign some signs to which absolute value of m we can give it the positive or negative sign. So the horizon state is characterized up to reordering some assignment with these labels. And then we are going to follow the following strategy to solve the problem. So we have this inequality in area, but we can first ask the question, which are the states, the sets of nk numbers that satisfy the equality? So we rewrite the area spectrum in terms of this end case, then we want to solve this quality. And after we compute all these NK sets satisfying a given value of area, we can compute for all for each of them all possible order lists of case, so all the number of all possible reorderings of these labels. We can also compute for this for each order list all possible sign assignments, such that we have to remember this equation 7 is satisfied. Equation 7 in the previous slide is usually called the projection constraint. So all these sign assignments such that the projection constraint is satisfied. And well, putting together all this degeneracy for each eigenvalue of the RF spectrum, we get a value. But we still have to remember that we have the inequality, so the last step we have to take is to sum this result that we are obtaining for all values of area lower than the area we are choosing. So through these four steps we can solve the problem. And then go to next slide. Then we start for the first step, which is even a characterization of this area spectrum. So we have this equation 9, that is the one that we want to solve. And it's interesting to notice here that any value of this square root of k times k plus 2 can be written as a linear combination of square roots of square free numbers. And square free number is a number which has no squares in its prime factor decomposition. So well, we have an integer number in the square root. We can just take out of the square roots all the squares, and what remains inside is a square-free number. So we can always do this. And this is useful, as we are going to see, because, well, we can rewrite equation 9 as we can see equation 10, just saying that every value of area that belongs to the black hole loop quantum gravity area spectrum has to be written in terms of a linear combination of square roots of these square free numbers. Okay, so by giving the coefficients of this linear combination, we can give all possible values of area. But then, well, this is the equation we want to solve now, but we can start with a previous step, which is given a single square free number, t, which values of k can contribute? Which values of k can give rise to a multiple of these square free numbers through the left hand side of equation 10? I just want to notice that here in equation 10, I have changed from 9 the inside of the square root, but it's exactly the same. If we ask this question, the equation we have to solve is equation 11. Given a square free p, which values of k can give a multiple of its square root? And here comes where we are lucky, because this equation can be rewritten as we see below: x squared minus p y squared equal to 1. And this is a well-known equation in number theory. It's called the Pell equation. So we can take advantage of this. And well, this equation is studied. It has known solutions. In fact, it has an infinite number of solutions for every square free that we choose. So and in fact, from the first solution, all the following solutions can be obtained just by using this relation that I have put here. So this equation, if we take a square free number p through the solution of this equation, we obtain the possible values of k and the possible y's, which are the corresponding multiples that give rise the corresponding A gives rise to a Y multiple of this square, free square root. So well, we can use this and rewrite equation 10 as equation 12, where we have made use of these solutions of the Pell equation just to write the square root in the left-hand side of equation 10 as multiples of the square, the corresponding square free numbers. Here I have two indices. The I is labeling the different square free numbers, and the M labels the different solutions to the Pell equation for a given square free number. Okay. So it looks like this, and but this is we can see going to next slide. This is a set of equations with well, the Diophantine equations with they have unknowns that have to take integer values, and in fact integer positive values. So we get this set of equations, and we can also take advantage of the fact that these square roots of square free numbers are linearly independent with integer coefficients. So all these set of equations are uncoupled, and we can solve them separately. So these Diophantine equations can be solved by standard methods also. Then we can get solutions. So well, I want to comment also that although I have put here an infinite sum, all the sums are finite in practice, because once we fix the value of the area, which is the same as fixing given values of the cues, as long as this area is finite, the sum that we get here has to be finite, has to have finite number of them. So for a given value of area, even in terms of these cues, the coefficients of the linear combination, there are two possibilities. We can get no solutions at all for these Diophantine equations, and this would mean that the value of area that we have chosen does not belong to the loop quantum gravity black hole area spectrum. Okay, but we can also get solutions. We will get solutions of the kind, well, pairs of k's and n's, which is which values of k are contributing to this area, and which number of punctures for each k. So, well, this is precisely what we were looking for. We were looking for the mk set. So we get the solution, and we get all the possible solutions. So all the possible configurations compatible with a given value of area are all the possible solutions to this Diophantine equation that, as I said, are independently solved. So we get these pairs of numbers for each of them, and then the total number of configuration will be the Cartesian product of all the solutions to each of the Diophantine equations. Okay. So well, we can go to next slide, because well, we have solved the first step. We have characterized the area spectrum, and we can go to next slide and try to address the second step, which is to introduce the all possible reorderings of labels for each given configuration of nk numbers. And this is a quite easy problem. It's just given by basic combinatorics, the number of reorderings, and is this term given in equation 14. It is quite trivial. We can introduce this factor for each of the solutions of the previous step, and then go to next step in next slide, slide 11. So we have to look for all the assignments for each sequence of case that we have. Okay, so well, we have with a given sequence of k's, we have associated a given sequence of m of absolute values of m, but we have to assign signs to them in such a way that this projection constraint is satisfied. This is very important. And at this point, we are lucky again. We are lucky again because it can be seen that this problem is analogous to the partition problem, which is also a known problem in number theory. So number theory comes into play again at this level. This partition problem can be stated as given a set of n natural numbers, which are the possible ways of splitting it into two disjoint subsets, such that the elements of both of them sum up to the same value. Okay, so this is exactly the same as if we have a list of absolute values of m, assigning plus or minus signs to them in such a way that the total sum is zero. Okay. The problem is that to find all solutions in general to this problem, it's very hard. I don't know if there's a general solution to this problem, but maybe there's no general solution. But we don't need to know all of them. We just need to know the number, the total number of solutions. And this is known. The solution to this question is known in general and is given by this equation 15. So given a set of a sequence of k's, and I put here also a set of n k's because this solution does not depend on the ordering of the k's, so it's the same for every single reordering, which is also good because we can after just multiply this by the number of reorderings and get the total degeneracy just as the product of both. And well, it's given by this formula here. So well, again, number theory helps us to solve the problem. And well, we go to the next slide and we can all put all these together and take every single value of area, compute all the NK configurations compatible with it, then add the reordering degeneracy and the sign degeneracy, obtain a number, and for each of the for every single eigenvalue of the black hole area spectrum, plot this number. And this is what we can see in this first plot. And we again recover this fine structure that we obtained with the computational analysis. But well, I cannot see it very well here, but we are reaching here more than 500 Planck areas, which is around three times the values of area that we were able to reach with the previous computation. So the first improvement that we are getting is that through this procedure we can reach higher values of area. And well, still we need to introduce the fourth step, which is summing for all values of area lower than the one we are considering. So if we do this, it's just like integrating all the for a given value of area, we plot the degeneracy of all the eigenvalues that is in the left in this plot, and we get this integrated degeneracy, which, as we can see here, shows this Stellar-like behavior. Well, we have here the exponentiated version, but in order to obtain the entropy, we still have to take the logarithm, so we will get this linear behavior with this Stellar-like behavior of entropy with area. Okay. So, I go to the next slide. And as I said, this four-step procedure can be implemented also in a computer quite easily, and it allows to perform an analysis of the solution with some improvements with respect to the other analysis that we have. The first one, we have already seen it in the previous slide, is that we reach higher values of area, as I said, but there are more good features of this. We also have a very controlled structure of the situation of all the values of case that are coming into play, so we can weight the different contributions of the different values of spin. We can also make a separate study of the different sources of the degeneracy, the reorderings, the signs, etc. And even more, we can make some tests of previous models that try to account for the origin of bands using some parameters. So we can very easily introduce all this information in this problem, well, in this setting, and get some information. So regarding the contribution of the different K values, we have carefully analyzed this issue. And well, there's a convenient fact here is that just by choosing the values of area that we are going to consider in order to solve the equation, we can control the values of K that are going to appear. Because as we know, if we choose linear combinations of some perfect numbers, the Bell equations tell us which are the k's that can contribute to it. And well, a given value of k can only contribute to one value of one, to a multiple of one square free number. So, well, we can more or less tune which values of k do we want to appear in the counting just by choosing one or a different value of area in terms of this linear combination. So this allows us to very easily perform analysis of the contributions of the different values, and this detailed analysis shows that only the lower values of this case are responsible for the highest degeneracy rate. So if we take into account just the first 6, 7 values of spin, so the lowest value of spin, we get all the states that is degeneracy in the peak. So in this plot that I was showing in the previous slide, we would get all the points that are in the upper part of the peak, and states that correspond to case that that involve case with high values. All of them appear in the bottom of this plot. So all of them give rise to very low degeneracies compared to the peak one. Okay? So this is one important result. And well, I go now to next slide. And as I said, we can also plot separately the two sources of degeneracy for each configuration. On the one hand, we can plot the degeneracy due to the reorderings of the case, and on the other hand, we can plot the degeneracy due to the sign assignment. And we can see both of them here. In the left hand, we have the reorderings, and the right hand plot, we have the sign. And well, we notice very clearly that there's a very different behavior in one and the other. So we can clearly see that the band structure responsible for this pair-like behavior comes entirely from the reordering degeneracy, while the different sign assignments give a somehow smooth compared to the other exponential growth. Well, we can still see some structure in there, but I don't want to go into details of this structure now. But well, we have an overall exponential contribution in the right side, while in the degeneracy coming from reordering, we clearly see that the bands are present there. Okay. And I go to next slide. So, and furthermore, I want to make a comment here because, well, there was an analysis made in last year in a paper in which we used a parameter k. I don't want to go into the details on how we define this parameter now, but we used a k that was supposed to characterize all the states in a given peak. So for we fix a value of k, all states satisfying the value for this parameter were supposed to appear in a given peak, and then by chasing the value of k, we were supposed to select different peaks. Okay, so with this, we were able to compute quite good accuracy the area spacing between the peaks. Well, and in fact, not only the area spacing, but the exact values of area at which peaks were supposed to appear. So we obtained as a result that peaks were evenly spaced, and we could predict the values of area at which the peak should appear. We tested this model of this prediction with the computational analysis, and it fitted quite well. But well, we can give here one more proof of this, because it is very easy now with these techniques to just select explicitly all these states satisfying a given value of k and plot them. And we can see in this plot, so the black points are all corresponding to a given value of k, while the gray ones have other values. And we see that, well, precisely these black points correspond very accurately to a single peak of degeneracy of this band, okay, the whole mountain. So we can say that it was a good choice, and this somehow supports the reliability of these results in that paper. Okay. Well, I go to the next slide, and we're going to change a little the issue now, because we have solved the problem using these number theory techniques. This allows us to improve the analysis, but still we cannot address the problem that was motivating us, which is the asymptotical limit behavior. For this, it will be very convenient for us to have some analytical expressions for the solution of this combinatorial problem. And this can be obtained with generating functions. So, these generating functions are functions such that allow to obtain these expressions, and we can ask, can we find a generating function for our case, for our combinatorial problem? And the answer is yes, as was shown by Fernando and Eduardo. They found this generating function, so it is very interesting. So the kind of functions that we are going to be using are functions of the variables x.i, such that if we perform a Taylor expansion of these generating functions, then by looking at the coefficient of a given term, which will be x1 to the q1, x2 to the q2, etc., this coefficient in the expansion will give us the solution for the given combinatorial problem corresponding to a value of area given by these q's, by the linear combination of square free square roots with coefficient the corresponding q's that are appearing in the exponents of the term. Okay. So, well, this function can be found, and if we go to next slide 17, we can in fact find a generating function for each of the steps that we follow in the combinatorial in the solution of the combinatorial problem, and we can finally find a whole generating function that solves in one step all the problem. So for finding all the number of solutions to the Diophantine equation, the corresponding generating function can be found in textbooks, and is given by this equation 16. We can also include in this solution not only the number of solutions to the Diophantine equations, but also to each of the solutions assign the corresponding reordering degeneracy, and all this is codified in this equation 17, and this generating function. And we can also give a generating function for the solution of the to the projection constraint. So for the number of different sign assignments for a given list of cases, such that the projection constraint is satisfied, and this is the equation 18. So we're here. We only have one variable, which is theta. But what we will have to look for here is for the coefficient of the constant term of the Laurent expansion of this function, because well, the exponent in the expansion that we choose for this theta corresponds to the sum of the total sum of the corresponding k list once the signs are given. So if we choose the coefficient of the zero exponent, so the constant term, we are getting the number of assignments that give rise to a total sum zero, which is the term that we want. So in this case, we have to look for the constant coefficient, the constant term coefficient. Okay. And in the ones up there, well, we, as I said before, just by choosing the corresponding exponents for the x, we obtain the degeneracy for the corresponding value of area given by these coefficients in the linear combination. So then I go to next slide, and well, we can also put all these terms together in a single generating function that solves the whole combinatorial problem. And this is equation 19. So we have, well, this theta again, that we have to assign value 1 of theta to the 0. So well, this is what I said before, the coefficient of a given term theta to the n, and then the q's to the dx to the q's is the solution such that the sum of the m's is equal to n. So we choose n equal to 0. And well, this generating function contains all the information that we can get from the, or that we can want to get from the combinatorial problem. So all the information of the solutions of the combinatorial problem is contained in this generating function. And one important thing is that we can obtain closed integral expressions from this generating function. Just expressing the corresponding coefficients that we look for in the expansion using the Cauchy theorem. So we get expressions of the kind that I have put here in equation 20, which are integral expressions that are a very good starting point for trying to look for this asymptotic expansion that will allow us to check if we can find this discrete or, well, discretized behavior of entropy for the large black holes. Okay. So it's also very interesting, this. And I go to the next slide. Then we can come back to the first question that we had. What can we say about this discrete behavior in the large area region? So with all this that we have done, well, the first thing is, we can say now something else that we could say before. And well, this question was also explored by Fernando Barbero and Eduardo Villaseñor, and they found, starting from all this setup with these generating functions and all this, they found an alternative way to find the same results that Meissner obtained in his paper for this asymptotic limit, but with some subtleties. So they found that there is a subtle point missing in the asymptotic analysis performed by Meissner. And this point is just that, well, Meissner performed an a Laplace transform, which is given by this equation that I put here. And well, to make the asymptotical, to study the asymptotical behavior of this think he considers that the real pole, which has the larger real part, is the one that dominates the asymptotic limit. But well, this is not strictly true in this case, because there is an accumulation point for the real part of the poles of this Laplace transform. So the real parts of the poles accumulate to the value, to this maximal value of the real pole. And with this, one cannot claim that only this real pole is the one that is going to dominate. So while it's still true that this real pole has something to say about this asymptotic limit, so it seems that the Barber-Mitchell parameter obtained by him is the value is good, but one cannot exclude a contribution, a non-negligible contribution from the infinitely many, infinitely close poles. When I say close, I mean in the real part. So these poles whose real part is accumulating to the highest one, one cannot exclude that there's a contribution from them. So one cannot just say that this behavior cannot be there. So this is a very nice result, because through this analysis we see that there is still room for this discrete behavior to appear in the large error limit. So by the time being, we cannot claim that it will appear, but we cannot claim that it won't appear. So this is the good point. This is more or less the main result of all this, all of the talk and all this new computation. And well, I just go to the last slide to comment some new windows or new paths of research that have arisen starting from this technique. So thanks to these powerful techniques that I have presented, we can address some problems from a new perspective. So the first one, as I've been commenting, is to look for an asymptotic analysis, an asymptotic expansion of the solution of the whole combinatorial problem. And this will, we expect this to tell the final word about the question of whether this discrete behavior is present or not in the large error limit. So well, this is a work in progress that we are doing. We expect to find this asymptotic expansion. Also, using expressions obtained from these generating functions and this number theory techniques, we have been able to compare the results with a different approach to the computation of entropy in this framework in loop quantum gravity, but using some techniques related with conformal field theories. So this is a paper also in progress that we've been doing here in Valencia. We expect it to appear very soon. And finally, well, one can also think about studying the possible effects of this degeneracy spectrum that we find with this band structure and possible effects of this in Hawking radiation. So there was also a paper on these issues that qualitatively. Okay. But now that we have a very precise control on all this degeneracy, we can try to address this same problem with much more quantitatively. So this is also a very interesting problem that we can try to address. And well, more or less, this is all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Some questions? question. So if we go to slide, for instance, 15, where you have these diagrams that have in the horizontal axis the area, and vertical axis presumably the number of states or something like that, the area, of course, is quantized. But because you're at relatively, well, not large, but, you know, far away from Planck scale values of the area, the quantization is very fine there. Those points that you're plotting, are they all the points on the sort of horizontal axis, or are you skipping some of them?
Well, they are all. But if you look at the bottom of the plot, where all the points become very dense, well, one cannot differentiate the number of points that are appearing.
Right, but in the calculation you're computing all the points. So, for instance, in these...
This is the point. There are some missing points down there. So down there, we have removed some of them because, checked that there were no missing points in the upper part, and just to try to simplify the computations, we are removing some of the points in the bottom. But if the points that appear that you can see in this plot, not just on the axis but up the axis, they are all the possible values of area there. All of them are represented.
And these peaks don't appear to be centered at any particular value, right? In the sense that they're not any multiple of black mass or anything like that.
Well, they seem to be multiples of, they are evenly spaced, and then they are multiples of a given quantity in terms of the Planck mass, the Planck area, but this multiple, this coefficient, is proportional first to the barberimetry parameter, and then they seem to be proportional to a numerical factor that seems to be very close to 8 times log of 3. So this is something that we have in mind since some time ago. And in fact, the computation that we did with this K parameter seemed to support this conjecture of this 8 times log of 3, because it was with 3 or 4 figures of accuracy, exactly the value of 8 times log of 3. But we don't have an analytical proof of this, so it's just a numerical value that seems to be very close to that.
More questions?
Could you comment on the parameter K, this capital K, you have here on this slide, and also what do you mean by this discrete behavior at the large areas you mentioned at the end of the talk? I mean, aren't the possible values discrete anyway, or what do you mean by discreteness?
There are two questions? Or
yeah, there were two questions, yeah.
Okay, so the
first
question,
with this capital K, and then the discreteness.
Okay. This capital K is defined as even combination of two things, which are the total sum of the spin values of a given state and the total number of punctures. So if you take a precise combination, which is 3 times, then I think it was 3 times the total sum of spins plus 2 times the number of punctures. This seems to be a constant for all the states in a given peak, in a given band. So the explanation of this is given in this paper. And in the last slide, you discrete behavior. When I say discrete behavior of entropy, I'm just referring to this stair-like behavior, this entropy increasing in discrete steps, this area that we found in the lower regime, but it was not found in the large area limit. So this is what I mean.
You mean that there's no washing out these steps or something like this?
That's the point.
Okay.
More questions? Okay, let's thank Jacobo again then.